This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, it's 7 o'clock on a Tuesday. It means it's time. You guys know what it's time for. It's time for our Odyssey NFL Insider. Ross Tucker Insider Calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Ross, happy holidays. Good to have you on the show. I saw your tweet about Juan Soto yesterday. I'm going to read it here. Ross Tucker, at Ross Tucker NFL on Twitter. Juan Soto signed a contract that obligates him to attend all nine innings of 2,430 baseball games over the next 15 years without drinking a single beer. No way I could do it. That's beautiful, Ross.
Well, no, I want everybody driving in their car right now,
yeah,
that's ever been to an Astros game.
Yeah,
I want to picture you going to an Astros game. You have to get there like 2 hours before the game.
Okay.
And you have to stay till the end.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not allowed to have a beer the entire time. Now, you can have a beer afterwards, but you can't have a beer the entire time. That sounds painful, yeah, to me. Like that makes me physically ill even thinking about. I mean, the whole point to go to a baseball game for me is that, like, the weather's nice. You're outside in a t-shirt and shorts. You're having a couple beers. You're having a hot dog. And every once in a while, you look at the field and you're like, oh, there's guys out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
Ross, you got to.
That's why I go to baseball games. Yeah.
Ross, you're going to have to speak to Evan Drellick, the beat writer for the Astros back in like 2012 and 2013. That's exactly what he did. And he ended up in Boston.
Yeah.
That's where he drove him to Boston. That's mm-hmm. how bad it was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, it's $765 million. Like, I'd figure it out. And I'm sure it's much more enjoyable if you're actually out there playing. But even standing in the outfield that many times seems horrible.
In the sun, in polyester.
Ross is the one former NFL player who is not jealous of MLB player salaries because they do have to pay that price of attending so many baseball games.
Right, and yes. Standing
around. I've already decided, if I was a baseball player, mm-hmm. I would be a starting pitcher, and I would have it in my contract that I don't have to go unless I'm pitching. Those guys have the best gig of all time.
Oh, yeah.
They, you know, it's like, I think they golfed the other days, mm-hmm. like, you know, or they're back in the clubhouse. Those guys, I think, do drink beers when they're not playing. It's incredible.
Yeah. Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, joining us. Hey, Ross, curious about this. You played for Bill Belichick. You cover college football, so I figure you're the perfect guy to ask this question. Belichick interviewing for the North Carolina job right now. He's come out and he's on the McAfee show yesterday. He's talked about what a Belichick-led program would look like. It would look like a NFL-type operation, he said. What are your thoughts on this as someone who's got really good knowledge of both sides of the equation here? How do you think Belichick would do in college?
Well, I got to tell you guys, I can't imagine a single guy that played for him in New England having any clue what it would be like for Belichick to be recruiting. Like, I would pay money, first of all, to hear what his response even was when the North Carolina chancellor asked him about recruiting. And then I would absolutely pay money to watch him sit down in a living room with parents and a 17-year-old kid and try to convince them to go to North Carolina or whatever college. Anything you can imagine in terms of positivity and recruiting and feeling good about sending your child to be with this person, all of the motives, everything you get when you actually play for Belichick in the pros is the polar opposite of even considering going there. Like, it's 100% negative reinforcement. Do you guys realize the first thing they do at 8 a.m. when you play for the Patriots when Belichick was there is he has a low light video of the five worst plays from the day before? I mean, it would be comical to see how fast those kids would go into the transfer portal. The whole notion of it is absolutely hilarious to me. I mean, he's not really nice to anyone. You know what I mean? Like, that's just not his shtick. That's not his thing. Like, I can't imagine him talking to, like, some 10th grade quarterback and kissing their butt, telling them he wants them. I mean, the only way I feel like that would work is if he was, like, straight grad transfer portal guys and was like, yeah, it's not like, I'll bring it here and, we'll do this, and then you'll end up getting drafted. I'll tell everybody to draft you, which, by the way, he wouldn't even. Like, unless they won the national championship, he would tell the NFL teams, yeah, don't take this kid. He's not, like, it's just, I'm like, fascinated by the whole thing. I don't believe for one second that he will go to college football or has any interest in college football. I think he's believing. I think he's trying to force the hands of owners that have either already fired their NFL head coach or are going to fire their NFL head coach. I believe that his primary impetus for wanting to coach again is almost entirely to break Don Shula's records. And last I checked, college wins don't count towards breaking Don Shula's record. I think he thinks this is the best way to get some of these guys that know they're firing their coach in certain cities, say, oh my gosh, we can't take the chance of losing Belichick, and to reach out and say, no, don't sign with North Carolina. We want you here in insert city here.
And I wonder with Belichick, because he was telling McAfee kind of how he would create it. It almost sounded like a pipeline to the NFL, that if you're capable of playing in the NFL, this is going to be the best preparation for you.
Well, that's got to be that's the pitch. It's his only pitch. It's a smart pitch. The only thing I heard that makes some sense is that supposedly he's really hoping to set his son up for a chance to be a head coach. And so that's very, very hard to do, especially in the NFL. Yeah. If he did it in college, if he had success in college and his son was his D coordinator, then maybe after 3 years or 2 years and they have success, then maybe he could help convince the university to keep his son on as the head coach.
Yeah, I think as he was talking, I kept thinking of how Saban explaining why he was retiring, which was basically specifically because kids aren't listening to the pitch that Belichick gave anymore. Right. They only want to know about how much money are they going to make. So as I was listening to him talk about that, my thought was it could really only work probably at a place like Stanford or UNC, like a place or UNC where it's an academically elite institution, and you're going to have those guys that are genuine student athletes that maybe are more mature, that their parents might bite on that. But I don't know at a powerhouse conference or at a powerhouse school if those kids are even – or their parents. Because that's one thing Saban said was the parents weren't asking about the education either. No. They just wanted to know how much money can you give us.
Well, I think Belichick would be fine with that part of it. I think the fact of them asking him about classes, like the idea the idea of like a kid being like, I can't come to practice because I have a lab. Like, it's just incredible. Like, it's absolutely incredible. You think
you're going to be a doctor? You're the dumbest kid I've ever seen. What the hell?
He's going to hand him a list of three majors they can have, tiddlywinks, basket weaving. Yeah,
I need you to be here at 10 o'clock on Tuesday. I have class. What is that? What do you mean?
Right.
What do you mean your class?
Exactly.
We're playing Tennessee on Saturday. There is no class.
That's wild. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. Ross, Texans coming off a bye week, and now it's Miami. They're getting a much different version of Miami than the one that they could have gotten back when Tua was hurt. As you look at this matchup, Noah Zeez Al-Shaair, obviously for the Texans, he's suspended. That's their defensive captain. What are your initial thoughts on this matchup with the Texans and the Dolphins as we head into this weekend?
Well, so I'm glad you said that, because I said this last week as it related to the Eagles playing the Panthers. Mm-hmm. I said it's not a lot of times who you play, it's when you play them. And, you know, all the Eagles fans around here where I live, they're like, oh, my God, Panthers are the worst team in the NFL. They'll beat them by 30 points. I'm like, no, they're not. You haven't been watching them over the last month. What happens a lot of times is people, very early in the season, they will put teams in a box, and they'll say that's who they are, right? Carolina's terrible. Bryce Young sucks. You know, the Dolphins, they're nothing without two, blah, blah, blah. And then they forget, wait a minute, the Panthers won a couple games that played very well over the last month, and they gave the Eagles everything they could handle. And the Dolphins have played extremely well since Tua got back. They lost two close ones right when he got back, heartbreaking fashion. Then, I don't know, you guys probably know, but they've probably won, what, three out of the last four or four out of the last five?
Yep.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're playing much, much better, primarily because of Tua, but also, and I talk about this all the time, the belief that they get in Tua. You know what I mean? Like, the belief that Tua gives them, having him as their quarterback and feeling like they have a chance. I mean, it came out, there was, you know, opportunities for the Dolphins to, like, trade Calais Campbell, but they decided not to. You know, they decided, you know what? We have a chance to maybe get back in this thing. Now, you know, they're still kind of on the outside looking in, but they're only two games back, and they have a chance. And at 5-7, you know, if they win out, you know, I think they probably get in. I think they probably get into the postseason or whatever they are, 6-7, whatever their record is. I think they probably get in. So this is going to be a very, very – the point being, very, very difficult game for the Texans.
Yeah,
I mean, the Dolphins are playing pretty well, and they believe.
They're 6-7, and the AFC is interesting, Ross, because there's a two-game gap between the playoff teams and everybody else right now. So, like, you got these 3-8-5 teams that are 5-6-7 in the AFC. Those would be the three wild card teams. It would be the Ravens, the Chargers, and the Broncos in some order. If you had to pick one of those eight, because the Dolphins will have to displace one of those teams to get into the postseason, what's your trust factor on those three wildcard teams right now, the Ravens, the Broncos, and the Chargers?
Well, we do get to the point now where a lot of it is who you play,
mm-hmm.
and what the schedule is over the last four games. So without studying that, I think the Chargers and Ravens, I have more faith in them.
Mm-hmm.
It's, by the way, it's one of those wild things. We had to look at the standings every week, because in my head and most people's head, nobody would believe that the Ravens and Broncos have the same record.
It's crazy.
You know what I mean? Like, like in most people's head, the Broncos are like a nice story with a rookie quarterback and they're exceeding expectations. The Ravens are like a top five team. And then you look and they're both 8-5. So, and I think that's probably why, you know, I have more faith in Lamar Jackson and Justin Herbert than I do in Bo Nix right now. But what they've done is impressive. I'll tell you the other thing that's super impressive. You know, for the Chargers and Broncos to both be playoff teams right now,
mm-hmm.
but the Chiefs are already 12-1, have already clinched the division, That's really impressive. Because it's not like they're playing in some crappy division where all the other teams stink. I mean, they got two teams in their division that might make the playoffs and right now are very, very much in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. You got Jim Harbaugh, Sean Payton, and Andy Reid in the same division. That's some good theater right there, no doubt. No doubt about that. That's Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Where are you at this weekend, Ross?
So I'm out in Arizona. Okay. Patriots at the Cardinals. So it'll be my first look at the Patriots this year. Watching them, two things jump out. Drake May is legit, and they've got like two or three offensive linemen starting that I've never heard of. Usually not a good sign for your team. And then the Cardinals, man, 2 weeks ago, they were 3 weeks ago for sure, they were right there. They controlled their fate. In the NFC West, they were in first place. And then they go to the bye. They lost the Seahawks twice. They totally outplayed the Vikings, but lost in the middle. And now they're in last place in the NFC West and have almost no shot because not only are they two games behind the Seahawks, but they lost to them twice.
Mm-hmm.
So they're effectively three games behind the Seahawks. But they're 6-7-2, and my belief is when you have a seven teams making the play, you get to 10-7, you're going, right? So one way or the other, I think if you get to 10-7, you'll make the playoffs. So Cardinals have to win out.
That should be an interesting one, man. A little Kyler Murray action going to go up against that Patriots defense. That should be fun. That's our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker. Ross, may your game day in Arizona be delicious. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great. See you, dude.
All right, thanks. That's Ross Tucker. You can get him on Twitter, at Ross Tucker NFL. Check out his podcast, all that stuff. Really, really good.
The Mayo Game Day Be Delicious is a resounding success, by the way. That's Brandy used it casually yesterday. She just randomly just said something about like Mayo Game Day Be Delicious.
It is a good one.
I don't know what the competing brands are for Hellman's or why they're advertising so heavily. I guess Duke. I don't know. I don't know if we've ever. I don't know if I've ever had non-Hellman's mayonnaise.
Do you ever stray over to Miracle Whip when you're in a mayonnaise?
Ew! No!
You don't like Miracle
Whip? I'm not a freak.
You don't like the zesty taste of Miracle Whip?
Oh God, no! I've never liked Miracle. I never understood them. I don't know why it exists.
Some people like it, man. Yeah,
I know it's quite popular.
Freaks, yeah, like me.
Is Miracle Whip not made by Hellman's?
I don't think so. I don't think I do not believe it is. But we're outside. Hellman's got theirs. We gave them the Mayo Game Day Be Delicious. I don't feel bad about mentioning Miracle Whip now that we're outside of the Ross Tucker window here.
I don't think they're even the same condiment. I don't think...
They're technically not. You're right. Miracle Whip is technically like a dressing. You know,
what do they put in Miracle Whip that makes it taste different than normal mayonnaise?
I don't know. Text in if you know. 713-572-4610.
Nobody's ever read an ingredient label before.
That's right. So we talked about Belichick possibly. Ross's response to Belichick coaching in college, it was kind of what I expected times 10.
Sean,
he is very skeptical.
No, when he talks about how it's negative reinforcement to the max, Ted Johnson and I used to kind of talk about this because Tom Coughlin and Bill Belichick both came out of that Parcells tree.
Yes.
And they're both kind of wired the same way. Mm-hmm. It's almost like there is a pall of negativity over the building. And it's so stressful all the time because you're constantly having your flaws pointed out. And it works. It's like an old school, Soviet era gymnastics program. They beat you down and beat you down to the point where almost you create everybody is just desperate for acknowledgement or some little smidgen of approval. And it's not good for your mental health, but when executed properly, it's very effective. You can be the Pete Carroll way, you can be the Bill Belichick way. Those are the two ends of the spectrum.
How meticulously do they go about finding guys, do you think? I know both are out of the game now, Belichick and Coughlin, but you played for Coughlin. You were drafted by Coughlin.
Yeah, yeah.
How meticulously do they have to go about finding guys who can respond to that sort of thing?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think that the one thing is probably for both Belichick and Coughlin that might surprise people or they don't consciously think about it is that when you have that kind of an attitude as a head coach in the NFL, you also got to understand that nobody's going to live up to your lofty expectations, almost nobody, other than like Teddy Bruschi in the case of Bill Belichick. Mm-hmm. So they do they have a tolerance for guys who don't fit the mold, and they're going to try to hammer those guys into submission. But, yeah, it's just different with the transfer portal. Like, even in the NFL now, there's more, I guess, I don't want to call it loyalty, but guys are tied to their teams more in the NFL now because of their contracts than they are in college.
Oh, way more, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it can work. I don't know if, I hate to say it can't work. It just, the degree of difficulty is a lot higher than it used to be.
Okay, so let's play this audio. Belichick was doing his weekly hit with Pat McAfee yesterday, and they asked him about, okay, what would, if you were to take over a college program, because Belichick was playing coy about mentioning North Carolina by name, but we all know the elephant in the room. They asked him, what would your college program look like? Take a listen to this and see if this sounds like something that is executable by Bill Belichick at the collegiate level.
Let me put this in capital letters. If.
Yeah.
If. Done. If I was in a college program, the college program would be a pipeline to the NFL for the players that had the ability to play in the NFL. It would be a professional program, training, nutrition, scheme, coaching, techniques that would transfer to the NFL. It would be an NFL program at a college level and an education that would get the players ready for their career after football, whether that was the end of their college career or at the end of their pro career. But it would be, you know, geared toward, you know, developing the player, time management, you know, discipline, structure, and all that. That would be life skills, regardless of whether in the NFL or in somewhere in business. And you know, I feel very confident that I have the contacts in the National Football League to pave the way for those players that would have the ability to have the opportunity to compete in the National Football League, whether good enough or not, I don't know. But they would be ready for it. I don't have any doubt about that. So, you know, that would be the, you know, the first comment that I would make, you know, relative to the structure of the program. It would be an NFL program, but not at the NFL level.
I think it's an awesome pitch.
A great pitch, yes.
That's, in this day and age, unfortunately, more appealing to NFL people than to recruits. Because Nick Saban said himself that just parents and players are not responding to or even asking about all of the academic stuff or the program itself or anything. It's just they want to know how much money you can get them.
Yep.
And yes, there will be players and parents who do respond to that. I think everybody listening right now is like, yeah. Like, everybody listening right now who doesn't have a five-star recruit child is like, yeah, hell yeah, that's exactly where I would want to go. But I think when they just start money-whipping people, it just – it's like – it sounds like Belichick is pitching – how wonderful newspapers are to Gen Z. Like, you're like, yeah, there's a lot to be said for a paper newspaper where you can't click on every article and everything. Yes, it makes total and perfect sense. A paper newspaper is a fantastic thing, but you're going to be pitching it to a deaf audience. Unless it's also, I think schools like Stanford, or like if you went to coach in the Ivy League or something, that's where you're going to get more kids and parents that are like, okay, I want the whole picture. I want to prepare this guy for, because that everything that Belichick talked about, and he said talking about preparing them for life, if it isn't including in football, I think the average five-star recruit just doesn't care about that stuff nearly as much as they used to because of the money dynamic.
Yeah, I find this way more interesting in this world than had Belichick. Let's say Belichick's time in New England ran out in 2015, and then he takes a year off to go do whatever the thing to do was in media back then. And then in 2017, he's approached by, like, forget about Stanford or the academic institutes. Yeah. And I think your point about that in 2024 is a good one. But what would that have looked like if it were the landscape pre-NIL and pre-transfer portal? That would have been fascinating. This is way more fascinating if he says yes to UNC and watching Belichick try to operate with NFL-style free agency to go with his NFL-style, even more than free agency. You can just choose to up and leave after a year, you know? Like, right. You said, there's no contracts. You can
at
just go.
At the same time, though, like it is with free agency, and maybe Belichick wouldn't want to push this out publicly, but maybe he's talking to ADs about it, is that, yeah, the transfer portal is like free agency, and the Patriots were really good at getting more out of guys who were not, you know, who weren't marquee free agents. Yeah. But he would be able to pull those guys in and get the most out of them. That, yeah, that might be part of it too.
Yeah. The thing
it's tough. It's a double-edged sword, though, too, because as he's pitching this NFL-style program to a lot of the kids that might be intrigued by that, part of it is also that, like, oh, yeah, and just like in the NFL, you can get replaced at any given time.
Yep.
You're going to get replaced. Okay, you're a great kid. That, whatever. We got a transfer coming in that's going to boot you out of here.
I don't know if you saw Brady's response to the whole Belichick. We're going to play it in the Pettycast at the top of the hour. They asked Brady about Belichick coaching in college, and Brady said something very similar to what Ross Tucker said about recruiting. It was pretty good. We'll play that at the Pettycast. Listen at the top of the hour. Be listening this hour. You got a chance to win tickets to see the Texans and the Dolphins. It's a Texans Ticket Tuesday. Stay tuned. Let's do a special Tuesday version of Acknowledge Me, because I got my new Acknowledge Me Ugly Christmas sweater. If you're watching,
it's a beautiful ugly sweater.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate that. Yeah.
As ugly sweaters go, that's almost not ugly enough.
Is ugly Christmas sweater redundant? Is there such thing as a pretty Christmas sweater?
Oh, no, yeah, there's nice Christmas sweaters.
Are there? Okay.
Yeah, especially, though. I was even watching, we were watching Dumb and Dumber, which I do consider a Christmas movie, by the way.
Okay. It takes place at a ski lodge, a lot of
doesn't
it,
doesn't make any rational sense, yes. And it's actually, I think, but I consider it a Christmas movie because I tend to watch it every year around Christmas
sure.
time.
Sure, yeah.
So the scene where, when Jim Carrey goes to the bar and he's wearing that, it's like a multicolored
a cowboy outfit
wool jacket.
Yeah.
I'm like, that is a nice jacket.
You like that?
I don't,
huh?
I know he's supposed to look goofy and everything, but I like that jacket. I want that jacket.
I bet you can find it online somewhere.
Ooh.
If you put in Jim Carrey Dumb and Dumber jacket, I bet it's out there.
I look comfortable as hell.
Yeah, it did look. It is.
The gloves,
it is a,
too.
Yeah, but it is a comfy looking outfit.
I've been thinking about, like, all right, I got to have some kind of consistent wardrobe or outfit.
A look.
Like, that's low maintenance or low energy. I really like Western shirts.
Mm-hmm.
I like the snap buttons.
Okay.
And I like a little bit of just, like, almost over-the-top kind of decorative stuff and everything.
You have that hoodie that you wear sometimes. It has that view of, like a Western skyline across the
front. Yeah, yeah.
It's very Western looking. I've noticed that before.
You like that? That's kind of more like a ski bum chic, though, too.
But the color scheme.
I want to look more like a fake cowboy.
Okay.
Yeah. Not an urban cowboy. I don't want to go full John Travolta on it, but I might just start wearing Western shirts. They're just it's so easy to snap the. I love the breakaway factor part. You know, where you can just pull all the buttons off at once.
That's nice, man.
Ladies like it
it's
too.
It's very convenient,
right, Brandy?
If you do it the right way, ladies like it. Yeah, if you pull it, just make sure those snaps come undone.
If you pull it and it
stays snapped, that's not a good look.
It's not like when I unbutton it, there's like glistening abs behind those snap
buttons. Enough verve, man, I would like to acknowledge the city of Pittsburgh.
Acknowledge me.
That is where I went that's where Amy and I went on our bi-week excursion this year. We went to the Steelers and Browns game on Sunday. We went to the Penguins game on Saturday. Pittsburgh's a very underrated city. You've been there. Well, you played there before.
My brother did his grad school at Pitt, so I spent a good amount of time
there. Yeah, it's a good sports scene there. My thoughts on the quick thoughts on the environment at the Steelers game. This is yet another stadium where sometimes as I'm sitting there 20 minutes before the game and the place is packed, where I'm like, wow, this feels like a different universe sometimes than the first quarter of a Texans game. That's all I'll say. As a diehard Jersey community would go, like, they are on the Indianapolis Colts level of number of people wearing jerseys at the game. They're all Jersey. Yes. And the most worn jersey. Now, keep in mind, this is an organization that has a history that goes way, way back. And the highest compliment I can pay TJ Watt is that amidst a franchise, now granted, he's their current superstar, but still, amidst a franchise that's won 6 Super Bowls, none of them in this era, really. The last one they won was in 2008. TJ Watt, easily the most popular jersey in a blue blood stadium. Easily.
I was jealous of you being at that game because it was, as I was watching it, because I wanted to share as much of your experience as possible. Mm-hmm. Man, that was a defensive line showcase for the Steelers. And at one point, I don't know if they pointed this out on the broadcast. I didn't catch it, but JJ told me that, because JJ was at the game too.
I don't know
if you guys were drinking beer together or not.
We were not.
But JJ said at one point they had 4 Wisconsin defensive linemen on the defensive line out there all at once.
For the Steelers?
For the Steelers, yeah. That was a brutally good performance by the front seven of the Steelers. Patrick Queen was just a missile all over there.
All over the place. Yeah.
Landon Roberts had some big stick.
Oh, yeah.
He just trucked the center for the Browns on one play, yeah, and then he had a tackle for a loss later in the game.
Yeah,
so the front seven in general for the Steelers, that was like vintage Steelers front seven defensive play.
It was cool. Steeler fans were enjoying it, no doubt. They won the game. I mentioned the fans were in their seats well before kickoff. And we've been to Green Bay and Kansas City on these trips too, Seth, and it's that way. And this isn't me throwing shade at the Texans. The Texans know they've got a get-in-at-kickoff issue here in Houston. The weather's really nice. People like tailgating. They take their time getting in.
Beautiful this week. Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's going to be nice. Now, the Steelers do have a thing they do. You've heard this song before because you played there. They have this song they play called Here We Go. And they have this thing they do like 15 minutes before kickoff, where the fans all sing this song together. So you got to be, and they count down to it. Anytime you count down to something, like they said, hey, be in your seats. 10 minutes from now, we're going to do Here We Go. Anytime you've got a countdown clock of more than like a couple of minutes, it makes it feel more important. They're all in their seats singing it. Turn it up, Ben.
So here we go. The Steeler Nation has the best fans. We are from Pittsburgh, the six-time Super Bowl champ.
I love this song, man.
This is good.
We love singing along with it, man. You can turn it down, Ben. Yeah.
That is okay. I could get into that. I could see it sounds cheesy, but when you're talking about your six Super Bowl victories, too, that takes a lot of the cheese out of anything.
Yeah.
All right, now I'm jealous.
I'm jealous too, man. Yeah.
That's the big thing. The six Super Bowl rings. A lot of when people worry about, like, hey, how do we get a culture like this team or that team?
Yeah.
Winning a boatload of Super Bowls tends to go, lasts generations, as we've seen with the Yankees. You know, like the Yankees just will lean on, you know, having decades and decades of really being able to buy. Going back to the day,
Cowboys.
As Patrick Crain had pointed out the other day, back before there was an MLB draft, the Yankees could just start purchasing players right out of high school.
Yes.
So it's been a long-standing ability to just outspend people. Yeah. That's why Juan Soto getting lost is so beautiful. But I've never heard that song before.
Yeah, okay.
Because like you said, it's 15 minutes before kickoff.
Right.
You're in the locker room.
Yeah.
Or at least I never noticed it before.
Yeah. So it was a really cool environment, man. Like almost no Browns fans there. It was amazing.
I've heard drunk Steelers fans going, "Here we go, Steelers! Here we go!"
They were doing that too.
Here we go, Steelers!
Okay. Yeah, Steelers. I would like to acknowledge Josh Allen. In a losing effort, he had three passing touchdowns and three rushing touchdowns in a loss. I don't know what the number was, but this was yet another thing that's happened this football season, Seth, where the record before when this happened, when a team didn't turn the ball over and they scored six touchdowns in a game, they're 215-0 or whatever.
Not anymore.
They're 215-1. The big sticking point in this game was the play calling towards the end, where there was the Bills are down 9 with a minute and change, like a minute 4 to go in the game. They had all three timeouts and they're at like the Rams 1 yard line and they tried to run the tush push with Allen and they didn't get in. Here's what it sounded like. They didn't get in, so they had to burn a timeout. And now you're screwed because there's a minute left and you only have two timeouts. If you score, you have to onside kick at that point. Tom Brady did not like this.
Will they just sneak Josh Allen again? They will. Allen on the sneak. Allen, he got it. He did not. And now they're going to have to use a timeout, to your point.
And then that's an onside kick.
It changes the thought process.
Yeah, we've got a 3% chance on an onside kick. To me, take three shots throwing it, don't use a timeout. And then you can kick it deep, use your three timeouts, and still get the ball in good time.
Yeah, he went on to say they basically lost the game on that play.
Yeah.
You know, running Josh Allen on that play, you had to burn a timeout. You're burning a coupon for 40 seconds is what you're doing right there.
Was that the point at which I saw people saying that, okay, this is where Brady really proved his worth
as
a commentator?
Yes, on the time management stuff at the end of games, yes.
I feel like, but that was the kind of stuff, though, that I don't think you needed a retired all-time great NFL quarterback to tell you.
We're looking for more out of Brady still, for sure. But I
checked in on that game because it was after the Steelers game and I was getting ready for KHOU, so Brandy was watching it, and I thought my My just kind of drive-by takeaway was it sounded like Brady was showing more emotion. And I don't know if it sounded 100% natural, but it feels like he's trying to just sound looser and more like a human being.
Yeah, I think he was offended as a former quarterback. You know, it's like someone who he was offended as someone who has managed many a game down the stretch in that situation.
Yeah.
That they would call a run play. And, you know, look, they're calling the play they think has the best chance of scoring a touchdown, but they ignored the downside of if we don't make this, the game's over.
Yeah, and that's the kind of stuff, too, that, I mean, Brady and Belichick were so good at that aspect of just squeezing down the last few minutes of a fourth quarter or overtime or whatever it might be.
Yep.
Those little things, they add up over time.
They do.
You know, they add up to regular season victories and playoff victories and everything else.
Well, and the Bills are still in the hunt for the number one overall, or they were before that game. Still in the hunt for the number one overall seed. They had two losses going into that game. Chiefs had one. And Chiefs are playing all these close games, man. Like the Bills have the head to head over the Chiefs. All they gotta do is have the same record, and they'll be the one seed. And they blew it at the end. Now they blew it. Like, look, they still would have had to get the ball back, you know, and use their three timeouts and then drive and go get a game winning field goal. But that much better percentage chance of that happening than recovering an onside kick. It's 3%. Hey, quick acknowledgement of Sam Darnold.
Acknowledge me.
Because I've been as critical of him as anybody. He threw 5 touchdown passes. Like, is Sam Darnold going to get a big contract from somebody this offseason? Like, he's on a 1-year, $10 million deal. Like, if you're the Vikings right now, like, Sam Darnold is not, like, he's not turning back into the pumpkin that we thought he would turn back
right,
into.
Right, right, right. Yeah, and Sam Darnold and especially Baker Mayfield, I think.
Yeah.
I think people are realizing, okay, we've gone through this 20-year shift in the way that quarterbacks operate and the way that how raw they are coming out of college into the NFL, all of this other stuff. And I think people are starting to come around to the realization that, all right, man, we just simply cannot write the book on these guys based on their first couple of years.
Yeah.
Geno Smith, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold now. Yeah, I think he gets a – I don't think he gets a, you know, record-breaking contract or anything, but I bet he gets a – I bet he gets a very, very respectable 3 or 4 year deal somewhere.
He will be a starting quarterback in the NFL next year. It might not be on the Vikings, but some team that's quarterback needy is going to sign Sam Darnold to a deal and make him their starter next year.
I will concede just to whoever – I got in an argument with a listener over the summer about Sam Darnold, and that guy was correct. I don't know who you are or what your name is or anything else like that, but you were correct, sir.
But they were taking up for Darnold.
Yeah.
I know. Me acknowledging him is my admission that I was wrong about Darnold also. 5 touchdown passes against a really crappy Falcons team, though.
This is the true test for you.
Yeah.
Is his face less punchable now that he's got a little bit of that stank
on him? It is because he went with the beard. You know, like if you grow out that beard,
his
face was way more punchable when he was clean shaven. But no, it's a less punchable. Less punchable. It's not punchable. It's just less punchable than it was before. I would still punch it if I saw him, but probably a little bit lighter. Maybe use my left hand instead of my good hand, you know?
Who's got the most punchable face amongst NFL quarterbacks
right now?
Not a single Tony Romo that I can think of.
No. Text in. Who's the – I mean, because easily it's Carson Beck at the collegiate level, the quarterback
God.
For Georgia.
He'll probably pay you money to punch him. Call me a dirty little bit.
I can't Pendergast. All right. So the Texans. Well, let's hear from D'Amico Ryans here coming up next. He was asked about the appeal of Azeez Alshire's suspension. What was the reaction of the Texans head coach as Miami comes to town this weekend? We'll hear from him coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Yeah, it was really, really nice to see the guys come back refreshed, seeing them bounce around today. In our practice, it was good to see and feel the energy from the guys, also feel the sense of urgency from all of us. Like, and that's what's needed at this time. And I mean, everybody's excited to be back out on the grass practicing. Like, we got our much needed rest, and now it's time to get back to work, which we're excited about.
I can't hear him say back on the grass without thinking of your sophomoric chicanery in the open to this show. Yeah,
about guys being on grass.
Being on the grass, yeah.
The way they. When was that big when grass was the term?
80s
back in
the for 80s? Sure. 80s for sure. Yeah, I don't know how long it lasted after that, but definitely 80s, yeah.
He's on grass.
Grass.
I just remember that being a big. I remember that being a big coach thing. What are you on, grass?
Grass. Grass became weed. Weed became, I don't know what it became after that.
I graduated high school in 1993.
Yeah.
I remember getting to college and being like, oh, wait, people smoke pot? Like, I didn't know. It just wasn't big at my high school.
Okay.
And I don't know if it was, and it's not like I didn't go to parties or anything, you know, like it was just all keggers back then.
Yeah, same.
But then I got to college and I was like, oh, people smoke pot. I didn't even know.
Oh, dude.
But then now, obviously, the culture has changed completely. But it feels like from the 90s on, it changed. It changed a lot, obviously.
Yeah, my freshman year roommate, same as you. Like, we were keggers. Beer, a lot of beer. And I got to college. My roommate was a huge, my freshman year roommate, who you don't get to pick your roommate, you just get put with him. Huge pothead. Huge pothead. He's hiding it in the speakers in our dorm room and everything. Yeah, it was back when you had to hide your weed, you know? It was interesting. Room smelled very strange. D'Amico Ryans.
Well, you didn't even know what it, did you even know what it smelled like? You showed up and you're like, what's that smell?
I mean, I'd smelled it before. I'd been around it at times, but it wasn't as prevalent. You know, it was very, you're right. It was way more.
It was, you know what? Yeah, because people were way more secret. And then I'd find out later when I went back, there were kids that were smoking pot. I just didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, like exactly. It wasn't in my social circles.
Same.
It was, it was different.
Yep. Here's D'Amico Ryans yesterday asked about the appeal of Azeez Alshire's suspension. They're moving on.
Yeah, it's going to hurt losing Azeez, but we're pressing forward. We're on to Miami. You know, nothing we can do about that. We're on to Miami, and that's our focus. That's the main thing for us right now is how do we go out and handle Miami.
You feel like as a team, just something additional you all can rally around, you know, not having one of your leaders on the team?
Yeah, for us, as I said earlier, like we've moved on from that, and it has no bearing on what we're doing right now. Our focus is on Miami.
Is there any rallying going on behind the scenes, you think, Seth?
I don't know, like, whatever anger there might be over the Azeez suspension or anything, I think that'd be short-lived. I think it's more the general, hey, next man up, all right, we're not going to have Azeez. You can't waste time, you can't waste time grousing about it. So whatever the rallying is, I don't think it's going to be like a free Azeez type thing, like the poster behind me. But then I also would expect that, I'm guessing Casario and D'Amico probably had a conversation during the bye week about like, all right, let's just be sure we just quell any public discussion of this. We don't need this to be a distraction. D'Amico yesterday probably addressed it and said, hey, we're moving forward. You don't need to be answering any questions about it or anything like that. It is what it is. It's a very is what it is moment. But we also know that, you know, a guy like Azeez is a guy that it's a shame to not have him around the building at all because he can provide leadership in the meeting rooms and on the sideline. So I guess I get that part of it, of not allowing the player around the building if you're going to suspend him. Azeez does bring value to the table just as a guy who's in the building.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the punishment for the team is not having that around.
I'm still amazed at texts like these. No disrespect to the texter. With Azeez out, could the Texans bring in J.J. Watt? I think it's fun. Like, well, for one, Azeez is a middle linebacker. Like, J.J.
Right. But I think it's a fair... Because I think people have brought that up, not in so much as that it's a direct replacement, but I think it's, okay, there's a guy in your front seven that could make it easier for the linebackers.
Sure.
If you get, one thing D'Amico talked about on the coach's show yesterday was, hey, every defensive coordinator's dream is to be able to rush the passer with four guys. It makes it so much easier to play safe defense on the back end if you're not blitzing. So JJ, in trying to make it easier for the linebackers in coverage, if you got one extra pass rusher in that rotation, that could go a long ways towards kind of displacing the loss of Azeez.
How nervous are you about the Dolphins and all the weapons and things like that this weekend?
I would say my normal level of nervousness. Yeah. I think the biggest thing, it's the Texans' defense has been really frustrating because on a down-by-down basis, like, they're very, very, very good. They are. So if you look at the stat like EPA, that kind of just adjusts for how are you on any given down, given in the situation. The Texans defense is way up there, especially in run defense. The problem is on their bad plays, they're letting up these huge chunks. And they're this defense that's so close if you could just eliminate this minor little detail of allowing so many passing touchdowns.
Chunk plays,
like, you're so close, except for the actual keeping people out of the end zone.
Stopping of points, yes.
It's kind of a big detail.
It's
hard to ignore, yes.
It's a fair point.
You're a beautiful woman with raging gonorrhea right now. Can you just get rid of the gonorrhea, please?
Yep. I'm sure that's what D'Amico put up on the PowerPoint this week. Guys,
Nico and I are very similar in our analogies.
Guys,
I can sense it.
Can we get rid of the gonorrhea? We're getting a lot of people weighing in on the punchable face question that we had.
Now that Sam Darnold's face is a little less punchable because of good play and a beard,
yes.
Who's got the most punchable face amongst quarterbacks in the NFL right now?
Here's a few responses. Aaron Rodgers, easily.
Oh, yeah. He almost looks too, at this point... He just looks too much like a middle-aged man.
Yeah, I feel like you'd be abusing an aging person, you know? Like,
I watch on social media a lot the just various altercations, fist fights and everything that come about where it's rare that it looks like a well-adjusted 49-year-old that's getting into this stuff.
Yes.
And I feel like Aaron Rodgers is at that spot. He's aged out of being punchable.
Okay. Will Levis, someone says.
Oh, God. Yeah, okay, thank you. Yes, 100%. Yes.
Trevor Lawrence is getting...
May your face be punched.
May your face be punchable. Trevor Lawrence, several votes for Trevor Lawrence.
I'm not into punching the ladies, I guess. All right. I like Chloe Savini as an actress way too much to be punching her in the face.
This is one I totally disagree with. Cam Newton back in the day, totally punchable face. There's a difference between being annoying... and having a punchable face.
Yeah, I would say
Cam is
no on punchable face.
Cam is very handsome. Part of having a punchable face is you've got to have some sort of goofiness about you, you know?
Cam plus, man, is one of those things you can't explain until you see somebody in person.
Yeah.
Cam's got a bit of an aura around him.
Yes.
I remember the first time I met him, I was kind of like, oh, this is a different type of human being.
Yep.
What the hell's going on here?
Yep. Mac Jones.
You want to go get a drink, man?
I'm feeling something here, Cam.
Mac Jones. And you got to remember that he was at one point in his life a tennis brat. There are child model photos of him around.
He's 100%.
Went to an exclusive prep school in Jacksonville.
Yes.
Yeah, punchable face.
100% yes. Do keggers still happen? Someone texted in.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that it's just too much. Like, I don't know.
When was the last time you saw a keg?
Like a keg outside a bar?
Yeah,
just
like at a party.
Like in somebody's garage or something?
Yeah,
This summer at my brother-in-law's got a huge, you know, he's a mason. He's got a huge garage.
Okay.
And he's got,
I'm not talking about a kegerator where it's built into a nice, like, tap.
But he also had the keg out because it was a big party.
Okay, so
it was
in a garbage can.
Out in the garage.
In the middle of it, so you can see the keg
Let me tell you, though, my brother-in-law, Dusty, very successful. He's a mason and he's got a restaurant, bar and grill. But he also has, like he's got these side-by-sides, these Rangers that are just so amped up and juiced up. Like, I'm guessing they're like $70,000 side by sides, he gets a new snowmobile every year. He's built himself like an adult playground, every fun thing that you would want to do as an adult when you're a kid. He's really good. And he fixes all this stuff himself and everything.
This is a man's man right there.
He's a man's man.
He's a man's man.
Yeah.
Hey, let's give some Texans tickets away here.
And as a man's man, he's got kegs of beer.
Yeah, that's
sitting
out
on the garage floor at his parties. All right.
Okay, the story all comes together. Pettycast. Lot of pettiness to get to from over the weekend around the world of baseball hot stove, around the world of NFL, college football as well. We've got a ton of petty to get to in the Pettycast coming up next.